You're listening to Retronauts, a part of the Greenlit Podcast Network, a collective of creator-owned and fully independent podcasts focused on pop culture and video gaming. To learn more and to catch up on all the other network shows, check out greenlitpodcasts.com. This week in Retronauts, we finally answer the question, can you fly, Bobby? Hi, everyone. Welcome to an episode of Retronauts. I am Jeremy Parrish, and we are not actually throwing Bob out the back of a van.
Second story.
Onto RoboCop's window. That's just not what we do. That's not what we do here. But we are going to talk about RoboCop, the movie from which that line comes, and also the video games based on RoboCop and the influence of RoboCop upon popular culture, including video games. So, yeah, this is the second entry in our Violence is Great episode series. The first was The Running Man, and eventually we'll do Die Hard.
Running Man was the lesser RoboCop.
Yes. RoboCop is Running Man perfected. And I think here to agree with me on that point is...
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert. You give me three podcasts, I'll give you the world.
And of course...
Hey, it's Bob Mackey. And without RoboCop, we wouldn't have Gizmo Duck. So I'm doubly grateful.
Awesome. All right. So let's cast ourselves back to the year 1987. We finally came out of the 70s recession, the 80s recession. Things are looking good in America. The Cold War is winding down. Mr. Gorbachev has decided to tear down that wall. Reagan is nearly out of office. Everything is looking so good, right? America is amazing and we love it.
Is this the me decade or is it the 70s?
It was kind of in like a combination of both. This was definitely – I mean – yeah, this was like the give me cocaine decade. And there certainly is a lot of cocaine in this movie. But you may think America is awesome. However, director Paul Verhoeven, who is Dutch, disagrees. And that is why he created RoboCop, the first of many of the satirical indictments he created of the American century, often in collaboration with writer Edward Neumeier. And RoboCop is a great science fiction action movie. It is kind of like I don't know. It feels like such a common story, but I feel like that's because so many things have adopted it and borrowed it. It's the story of a man who is blown up and shot to death and murdered until he is extremely dead and then turned into a cyborg who solves crimes. Actually, he just stops crimes. He shoots crimes until they stop.
He's not much of an investigator robo.
No, he really isn't. It's like detective mode in Arkham Asylum. He just like scans and shoots.
Well, you know, the story of it is so – I was thinking about this. I've thought about RoboCop a lot over the years and I just think about how original it feels even though like it's the concept of a lawman gunned down by a group of black hats who then comes back from the dead to avenge them. Like that's the Lone Ranger. That's a million cowboy movies.
It's the Revenant.
The Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah, it's that too. It's so many stories. So it's not an original story. You know, it just finds a way to tell it in a very 1987 way. And it's something that makes me sad in today's era of remakes of just like RoboCop was a new thing. You can be inspired by RoboCop, but that doesn't mean you have to remake RoboCop.
Especially not in a boring, bland kind of way.
Well, that's the only way the machine knows how to make it.
That's true.
Yeah, but no, RoboCop is it's so creative even with such a old school idea behind it.
Yeah, and you know, as I was kind of getting to, the fact that it is a science fiction sort of cop revenge story of a sorts is kind of supplemented or complemented by the fact that it's a great satire of the direction that American culture and American business were going, American politics. And as with The Running Man, you see a lot of things happening here in this story that seem like satire in 1987 and are extremely on the nose and very like, oh, that is a thing that is real now here 32 years later. Good Lord.
I mean, reality is fully left behind RoboCop.
Yeah,
now,
I mean, we did the Running Man episode, and there was a parody of a game show called Climbing for Dollars, which people were climbing ropes and dogs were attacking them. I think Netflix just had the game show where you electrocute people.
Mm-hmm.
There was a trailer for that recently.
Yeah, it's like Don't. I think.
Yeah.
Wait, wasn't that like just the an adaptation of the Japanese game show Irritating Stick?
Japan electrocuted people first on game shows, but we're just ripping them off as we usually do. But I'm saying. Satire and parody of outpaced reality at such a huge rate that it's hard to even create satire and parody anymore.
Yeah, but this movie seemed so over the top in 1987, and everything about it now is very calm. Like, it was definitely one of the movies that happened around this time that really pushed the envelope of how violent a film could be. This movie was originally rated X by the ratings board, and Verhoeven and his editors had to keep trimming it and trimming violence and even, you know, like cutting it to the absolute limit of what was allowable in the R rating. It's still extremely gruesome and bloody, and you see just like chunks flying out of people.
Like one dude gets melted and run hit by a car.
People are extremely chunky and just like parts of bodies fly out, and you get like real viscera in this movie.
Well, in an age of so much digital blood, seeing that first death on screen and just like the jibs, I think you'd call them. Just
squibs.
Like,
squibs. Squibs are the things that explode to create special effects. Jibs are the giblets.
Jibs are in the squibs.
Squibs and jibs. That is the recipe for success.
The jibs flying off of his squibs are incredible. And especially like – I mean, it is gratuitous how much he is shot, but that is the joke. Like, it is a gag, but also it's meant to make you feel horrified too.
Yeah, it's a lot of things happening at once. And, you know, this movie walks a very delicate line of exploitation and actually making a point and telling a good story. And I feel like it balances those things extremely well. This is a movie that I did not get to see as a kid. Mm-hmm. I got to see RoboCop cartoons and comic books and toys, all the fun things for kids based on this movie. But the movie itself was not fit for children. And you can edit it for TV, but even then you kind of lose a lot of the impact because a big part of what drives the narrative is people dying horribly and bloodily.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was thinking of so whenever we go leave Retronauts recordings, we get sushi at the same place, and there's a literal robot cop rolling around downtown, like ED-209, like the big trash can robot. I don't know what it does.
The one over by the burger place.
Like, I don't know what it does. I feel like it sprays people with things, or
it's meant to make you feel unwelcome.
It screams at homeless people, probably. I'm guessing.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, we have robot cops patrolling the streets.
Stay out of trouble.
Yeah, I got into RoboCop as a child watching the Marvel Productions cartoon series of it. And what's, again, great satire of RoboCop that also turned it into a commercial product is he's designed to look like an action figure, to be sold to kids in-universe. But that also makes him unironically sellable to children in the real world as an actual action figure.
I mean, the design of RoboCop was very heavily inspired by Iron Man, a comic book character, and Rom, Space Knight, a comic book character based on a toy. Mm-hmm. So yes, naturally he is very, as they say, toyetic and lends himself to action figures. He's got cool features like his leg pops open and an auto machine pistol pops out, and you can take off his visor and see the battle damage underneath. And you can have like a replacement chest plate that has battle scarring and bullet holes. He's just made to be a toy. And the ED-209 is also made to be a toy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think you can buy multi-$1,000 miniatures of the ED-209. And later you could buy the Metal Gear Rex, which was exactly the ED-209.
I do think actually my parents let me watch it as a kid because they rented it thinking because it was a cartoon show, it was for kids. And it was scarring to me to watch Murphy be butchered in the movie.
Yeah.
I think I tried to forget it as best I could as a child, or the images didn't really make sense to me.
It's possible you might have seen like an expurgated version also, because I think they did edit it for TV or
even
maybe R-rated
even
video
it's
releases.
A lot for a kid.
Yeah.
I don't think I watched the entire movie until I was an adult, because I just remember like through cultural osmosis RoboCop was so popular, there were so many parodies, and I probably saw the cartoon, and I was just aware, like, the idea of RoboCop or RoboCop is cool. I played the NES game, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's a bunch of cheesy action movies. I didn't know the first movie had such a high pedigree and was so esteemed and had such, like, important cultural commentary, despite having the stupidest name in the history of movies.
I mean, he's very much kind of in the Judge Dredd mold also, with, like, only his mouth is exposed under his armor. But yeah, it's a super bloody, super violent movie, and it really, like I said, pushed the envelope forward. And nowadays, you see much worse in movies. I mean, would Human Centipede have happened without RoboCop? I don't know. or Saw. Like, you know, you had this movie kind of pushing the boundaries but making a point with it, and now you just have movies that take it for granted, like, oh, we've established a new baseline for what we can get away with on screen.
I mean, not to get too relevant or political, but now
might
movies
well.
are so, the message is so daring and dangerous that our dumb, wet president can say no more and take the movie away, like The Hunt or whatever.
Yeah, whatever that thing was.
I'm sure it wasn't even a good movie, but just the
probably
very
not.
Idea of
– it sounded extraordinarily dumb.
Of satire. Just like a smarter version of The Purge, or like The Purge was something else to say.
Well, you know, I do think there are movies today that do keep the spirit of RoboCop alive. I think a film like Get Out, for instance, really does. Like, it takes a genre thing and it takes a very tired genre of horror but says something very important with it through horrific violence.
Right. And like, also with, like, completely changing the context of the horror. It doesn't seem like a horror movie at first, and then I haven't seen the movie all the way through, but I've seen enough to know that, like, it just is a little unsettling, and then it becomes more and more so.
No, there are still films like that, but I think too, like, RoboCop was a very big budget film for its time, and I think Verhoeven and
it was only like $13 million. It was actually not a huge budget.
Okay, it looks bigger budget.
Like, by comparison, Die Hard was twice the budget.
Though even – well, I guess big budget for the 80s is not big budget now anyway.
Yeah, as much as I love the stop motion in this movie, it is very Ray Harryhausen. I feel like a skeleton's going to climb out of that thing and dance around for me.
Phil Tippett did his best, Bob.
I know. I'm saying he needed more money.
But okay. But I just think, the big budget things now, especially science fiction like this with this sleek shine on it, I don't think – you could make it now, like, not in this way for this type of genre anyway. Like, I think executives would get too involved in it. Like, I mean, not that executives of the – film executive of the 80s were no less, like, greedy and corrupt than now, I would say. But I think they were at least less savvy. So I think, you know, the director and writer really – and everybody else involved really got a lot past them in what RoboCop is.
Yeah, and now the stakes are higher. There's more money involved, so there's just more corporate level control. So you're not going to see movies like this come
out.
Also,
would have to be
a
franchise
studio,
you know, like it.
Right.
Have to,
oh yeah, this is the beginning of the RoboCop trilogy, which actually turned out to be the case, but not by design. And we can ignore the second and third movies because they're just absolutely terrible. Well, I don't know. Henry, you are a RoboCop super fan. Is there anything redeeming about 2 and 3?
3 is the worst.
Absolutely. I mean Weller didn't even come back for that.
It's a fun, bad movie if you're watching it thinking, I'm going to watch a fun, bad movie, have some beer or whatever. But that's basically it.
Yeah, but if you're watching it, like, I would like a follow-up to the extremely good satirical science fiction masterpiece RoboCop.
That will never happen.
I mean, the RoboCop TV series was better than the two movies.
Like, oh, the live-action one.
Yeah, the live-action one. Yeah, it actually tried to get back to satire. I mean, not as cruel and wonderfully biting as the first movie, but it at least had – I think the television aspect of it let them be a little more creative. I mean, it was about as satirical as like a sharp-edged episode of Star Trek or Babylon 5, but that it wasn't a bad show. But no, the movies especially the third movie is summed up to me. I got lucky enough to go to a – screening of Monster Squad at the Castro Cinema Theater here in San Francisco. And they had the director there who was like the co-writer of it with Shane Black. I forget his name, but he's also the director of RoboCop 3. And the person, they did a Q&A after, and the host asked him about, like, well, you know, we're talking about Monster Squad. You also directed other stuff, RoboCop 3. And the guy, like, gets up out of his chair and hides behind the curtain. He's like, And then once he's done with that joke, he sits back down. He's like, look, I know, but I got offered to make the movie. They had a Frank Miller script, and I'm a big comic book fan, and I thought, let's give it a shot. I know it's not good. Like, and he also just said, like, they had a PG-13 rating that was forced on them. They had more toy designs they had to do. It just – he knew it couldn't be good, but he at least tried. He tried. I appreciate that.
Well, I don't think we realized that Frank Miller was awful yet at that point. Mm-hmm. So it was understandable for him to say, well, this guy is a revolutionary. He wrote Ronin. He wrote The Dark Knight Returns.
Mm-hmm. He was the first weeb.
Yeah.
Oh, a Daredevil? My God. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, Ronin, you know, at the time, he still had cachet. He wasn't like Frank Miller 2019 where we know who he is.
Well, he really lucked out on us not reading Lone Wolf and Cub in America, most of us, and not knowing what he was ripping off.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I do think his you know, RoboCop, at least one scene in it is ripped straight out of The Dark Knight Returns too, like one big moment in RoboCop. But
The first RoboCop?
Yeah, the first RoboCop. The pulling the hands through the wall that pull out
right,
the guy.
Oh, right. Like,
That's straight out of Dark Knight Returns. So I think Frank Miller wasn't a bad choice to hire for it. And I think
– because RoboCop, he balls nasty.
Why, when you see Dark Knight Returns, like it did have what seemed to be social commentary, which now I think he just meant. And he's like, no, I want Clint Eastwood to put on a costume and murder punks. Like, I want that. This isn't a joke.
All right, so we've been talking about Frank Miller, and we shouldn't, because he had nothing to do with RoboCop. Instead, it was the a much different crew of people. Again, the kind of lead creative visionary here as for the movie was the director Paul Verhoeven, who is Dutch and was not really part of the Hollywood system at this point. He had directed some films back in his home and had filmed, I think, directed a small American release to this point.
Oh, yeah.
But it was, you know, kind of like a minor film that no one really watched. And when the script came across his desk, he was like, this is stupid. I have no desire to make this. And it was his wife who checked out the script and fished it out of the trash basically and said, there's actually something here and you could do something great with this. So we have Paul Verhoeven's wife, whose name unfortunately I do not know, to thank for the existence of RoboCop, because otherwise it would have just gone straight into the garbage and who knows if it would ever have been made into a film if, you know, someone else would have optioned it. By all accounts, Paul Verhoeven is a very intense man as a director, but not abusive. He's not like a Christian Bale or something. He's just like – I think it's probably just a cultural difference, like European versus American, different expectations, different perspectives on things. He's very professional and wants to get things done and is very serious about it. He refers to his cast, like when he's directing them, he refers to them by their characters' names.
Yeah.
As opposed – so he's like, hey, Murphy or, you know, Lewis or, you know, the two girls in the cocaine scene where Morton dies, he just called them bitches on set. But it wasn't like a derogatory thing. It was just that's what they were referred to on screen.
I mean, we all know this, but he survived Nazi Germany, so I would forgive him for being a prickly pear at times.
Yeah. I mean, he has made some great movies and is – a fantastic satirist. And, you know, he's as Henry and I were talking about before this episode, he is at his best when he collaborates with RoboCop's scriptwriter, Edward Neumeier, who was an industry veteran who apparently had been in the business for like 15 years by this point, or 10, 15. He had worked on the Taxi TV series and had been basically working behind the scenes as a script doctor for Hollywood throughout the 80s. And this was the first script he had ever written from scratch. And, you know, this was inspired by a few things, but perhaps most of all by Blade Runner, and not the movie Blade Runner, but by like a Blade Runner poster, which he saw and kind of thought, well, here's a cop who is hunting down robots. But what if the robot were the cop?
A robot cop, if you will.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Just drop out that T and have a RoboCop. Yes.
You know, even without Neumeier, like, What I like about Verhoeven?
I say Verhoeven. I don't know if that's correct.
Verhoeven.
what I also really like about his work is that he works in the high and low always at the same time, and he couples them together like I think on a certain base level he does like sex and violence, and he films it so well. He's like, I want to show boobs here. I want to show a guy exploding. I want to show these things. But he finds a way to make it in service of high-minded ideals and commentaries on, you know, fascism or fame or even showgirls. Like that has – he films the stripteases as sexily as anybody could, but he also wants to talk about how like empty existence can be at that level too.
Yeah, Total Recall is his next movie, and it's not as I guess serious as this one in terms of what it's trying to say, but it also has those themes and it's also super violent. His head explodes in the beginning in a dream sequence.
Oh yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, you mentioned he loves violence and boobs, and there's a little bit of boobs in this movie, but very, very little, a flash early on, and it is not gratuitous. He doesn't like, you know, the camera doesn't linger over the topless woman. It's in the police station in the locker room.
Yeah.
And you basically just see there are men and women together here showering, getting dressed, and it's not sexual. They're just like, you know, they're colleagues. Weirdly enough, that tiny little flash of breast is actually kind of saying, you know, there's not really a gender difference here. It's just men and women, you know, equally empowered, all working together to enforce the law, and also all very likely to die horribly because of the situation in which they are fighting for the law.
I think gender-free bathrooms are a major theme in his work, that in Starship Troopers, I was just at PAX and on one floor, just like, oh, these are just like anyone can use these bathrooms and they're open to everybody.
Now, Starship Troopers is filmed a little more sexually that moment, but in both cases, it's supposed to be like a disarming version of the future, but also a big point he made in Starship Trooper, even more so than this, is that like an ability to reach equality inside a fascist war machine, is that still good? Is it like, you know, oh, well, everybody's equal. Men, women, all colors are working together. In what? Oh, a fascist war machine to kill bugs and take over other planets.
Yeah, I mean, at no point are the you know, working in the police presented as glorious here. Like everyone is basically there to go through the meat grinder. And, you know, like the entire plot is precipitated by the fact that when Bob Morton gets his RoboCop program through, he's like, oh yeah, we'll have a volunteer soon. Basically, we have chosen, you know, likely candidates to go out and die horribly in the line of duty.
He's talking about the algorithm, which is what creates everything now. Like Netflix cancels shows because of the algorithm. Twitter shows you things because of the algorithm. Amazon sells you a thing because of the algorithm. And this guy's like,
OCP is Amazon.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Amazon is going to be involved in the military at some point. So
I mean, they already are in some
ways.
They're
selling stuff. Yeah, they're part of it.
Google is really on board. But
I see. It fucking sucks to live in the RoboCop future. It's not as cool as I thought.
It's not. Where's Delta City, damn it?
Well, I guess the promise is you'll someday get Delta City, but it actually will never
come. Yeah, that's true. The project never actually happens, even in the sequels.
Imagine an end to crime, an end to poverty. Imagine 2 million good jobs waiting to be filled. Sounds like a dream, doesn't it? Well, sometimes dreams come true. Delta City. For our children.
All right, so we've talked about the creative leads here, but also let's talk about the on-screen personalities. I've kind of identified four people as the main, you know, the lead characters here. First of all, the lead actors, actresses. You have Peter Weller, who plays Officer Alex Murphy, a.k.a. RoboCop. And Peter Weller was not an obvious leading man for a science fiction action movie. In fact, they originally wanted, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger as Alex Murphy. And thank God they did not get him. They ultimately chose not to have Schwarzenegger because he would have looked ridiculous in the RoboCop suit. It's very bulky, yeah. And they said he would have looked like the Michelin Man.
It's also very lazy. Like, you were a bad robot. What if you were a good robot instead?
Yeah. But, I mean, the thing is, Schwarzenegger, as much as he is like a charismatic on-screen presence, I never feel like there's any humanity in his work. Mm. He is not good at projecting himself as a person. He is a character. And to make RoboCop work, you need that element of humanity. And the choice of Peter Weller as this character I think was inspired because it was so kind of out of left field. He was a character actor primarily known for his work on stage, but he lends Murphy and RoboCop so much warmth. Like, you know, when he is – in the 5 minutes you see him as Alex Murphy, he just seems very likable, kind of like a humble, down-to-earth – earnest cop who's, you know, basically always lived kind of a good life in a comfortable precinct and has just been reassigned here and has no idea what he's getting into. But he immediately bonds with his new partner, Lewis, and like he respects the fact that she's tough and, you know, kind of wants to call her own shots. There's like a little bit of back and forth about who gets to drive the police car. Mm-hmm. And you instantly like him. And so when he is blown to pieces and dies horribly, you feel terrible. Mm-hmm. But then later when he's unmasked and, you know, he is RoboCop and contemplating his life, he seems genuinely mournful, like melancholy. And you really – your heart goes out to him because he's living this awful existence.
So two things. So Terminator 2, Arnie does play a good robot, and in that movie, the cop is the bad robot.
Yeah.
So it's a real tables have turned. Number two, I think they got a lesser-known actor for this or a higher-profile actor didn't want this because it's sort of like with the Marvel movies in that your face is hidden the entire time. So you're telling me, Henry, I don't see these movies, but there's now like technology within this world of these movies where you can see their faces at all times or whatever?
Every character who has a mask in the Marvel universe has a magic technology that instantly removes the mask so you don't even take it off.
Yeah, I feel like not being able to see the character's face for a long time is why no one probably wanted this. People that are at a high level, like it's not like Batman where you can be Bruce Wayne for half the movie. In this movie, you see you're mostly Chin Man for 80% of it or 90% of it.
You don't even get to see his chin. It's just lips. Lips guy.
That's why Superman should be the perfect hero for movies now, superhero movies now, because he never wears a mask. But well, Arnold had such editorial control even by that point with his star power that I think this film wouldn't have had the edge it would have either if he was there. He probably would have been like, oh, don't do that.
No,
don't do that.
RoboCop can't get shot up here. He's got to fight his way through. Yeah. He can't rely on Lewis to save him when he's being gunned down. He has to save himself.
But I bet I could spot Peter Weller's lips from across the room now.
Yeah.
Just if he's in a party, like there's RoboCop right there. RoboCop. Get him.
But I mean, I do feel like his face being obscured for so much of the movie lends it much more impact when you finally do see his face because, you know, the final act, he is unmasked and is fighting through and there is this sense of vulnerability. Like his face is the only part of him that's still real and it's out there exposed. And so, you know, if he gets a shot to the face, that's pretty much it for him at this point. Mm-hmm. So it lends, you know, the appearance of his face more dramatic impact and also just makes it much more memorable. And again, like there is this very human expression about Weller. Like he's just really able to carry himself.
Well, and the sacrifice Weller has to do to be in this movie, like it's, you know, Chewbacca has to be on screen in a giant costume the whole time, but he is not your lead in the movie. This is your lead in the film. And he has to act through all this stuff while like sweating all of his liquid out of his body at all times.
Yeah, he was losing like 3 pounds a day on set because they were filming in Dallas, not Detroit.
And then plus two, they hired him because he is such like a gaunt scarecrow of a man, which means the prosthetics look normal enough with them on him. He's not gigantic and 4 foot wide shoulders.
I mean, he's still pretty gigantic.
Big. Yeah. And
he's very Calipigian.
And another thing you don't appreciate immediately with him because you're just so into the role of RoboCop. When you're first watching, especially if you're young, you're like, man, he look at him move his robotic arms and like all the way he shifts around or his the classic scene of him in the chair having the nightmare. Like that's all him. Like that's mime. That's like acting right there in movements. But you just forget and you're just like, yes, the robot man's robot arms move that.
Yeah. I mean, he has to pantomime to be a robot man while still acting with his face or in some scenes, just his lips. That's really tough. I mean, if you really watch the way he moves, you know, he has this extremely specific and consistent way of moving. Mm-hmm. Like he steers himself with his head. He turns his head and then his body rotates to follow. And he does that through the entire damn movie as RoboCop, even when he's unmasked. Like I feel like that's a very, very challenging, you know, request of an actor, an expectation.
I wonder if
I really
figured,
respect him for that.
I wonder if he figured that all on himself or if he was
coached.
No,
he had a coach.
Okay. Like the robe, like the – so the guy you see down at the pier that's the living robot you give a dollar to, he was like the Peter Weller acting coach.
He might have been, yeah.
Those guys freak me out, by the way.
Yeah. The silver guy in
like,
Square.
Yeah. Don't get close to them.
No. Yeah, he actually spent a long time working with a pantomime instructor, and then they gave him the suit, and it was much bulkier and heavier than he expected. So he had to basically relearn his pantomime overnight because the suit was so delayed in its construction that they basically gave it to him and were like, "You're shooting the next day." So he was overcoming a lot here.
And you wouldn't – I mean you don't see it in the film, which also like that's editing to a degree too and special effects. But it's also like you will believe he can get into a car and sit down and drive a car.
Right. Yeah. That scene definitely popped out to
me.
Which he's
like bottomless when he's driving the car.
Yeah,
he's
like wearing boxer shorts.
Yes. Yeah.
So also in this movie, a major character is RoboCop's partner, Nancy Allen. And she's actually one of the veterans here. She had been in major dramatic horror and science fiction films since the mid-70s. She was also married to Brian De Palma for several years. So she was like a Hollywood insider. She had the inside track personally and professionally. Yeah.
I didn't know that De Palma bit about her. That's why she's so good at playing just this tough as nails character. Like her introduction is such a perfect introduction in the movie of just – beating the shit out of some guy.
Yeah. I mean at no point in this movie is she like a damsel in distress. At no point is she crying or hysterical. She avoids – like the writers avoid all the cliches of you know a woman in a situation like this. She really – like it could be a gender neutral role. There's nothing about this that says, hey, it's a woman. Mm-hmm. I mean even when she gets shot several times by Boddicker in the end and falls into like this gross rusty water – she still manages to save RoboCop's ass and then her one response is, "Murphy, I'm a mess." That's it. She's not like, you know, weeping about it or like save me or anything like that.
I would think in any other 1987 film made in America, she would have been captured by Boddicker and he'd have been holding a gun to her head.
Yep. Like they really like – yeah. I mean the writing in this really does treat the female characters with respect, like aside from the bitches.
She saves RoboCop more than he saves her in the movie. Mm-hmm. I think Anne Lewis, she's written as kind of a gender neutral character. I think they didn't even in the script I think at one point they considered it could be a man or a woman. Like they didn't write it to be a woman initially. Like
And there's no hint of any kind of romance between them. I mean Murphy's married.
Yeah, I love that. I love that
they're
too.
Just – they're partners. They have mutual respect. They like each other.
I ship them,
and they've got
though.
Each other's back.
I do ship them.
I feel like you don't
there's
have
a bit
to.
Of a spark there, no pun intended. I mean we don't know what's – okay, I don't want to get too deep into this, but what's happening down below with RoboCop? You don't know.
If they shaved off his arms and legs, I would think –
They said full prosthesis, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I think, there's not much other than his spine and head. I think.
Well, I mean, the movie.
Like Raiden in Metal Gear.
The existence of being RoboCop is just pure body horror.
Yeah,
just,
it really is.
It's a nightmare. Like, you don't think about when you're a kid, like, cool robot guy. Yeah. But then we see the movie, it's like, oh, my God. It's like existential nightmare. Like, what is living? What is death?
When you finally see him, like, you know, I just rewatched this last night to refresh myself. And when you finally see him without the mask. He doesn't look like a dude in a costume. He really looks like this machine with a face sort of grafted onto it. And it's just like, yeah, I would also sit there and feel sad and be like, I want to be alone for a while because holy shit, my life is garbage now. Anyway, speaking of garbage, Ronnie Cox plays Dick Jones, and No, Ronnie Cox is not garbage. He is a good actor. Dick Jones is garbage, though. Mm-hmm. And Ronnie Cox was best known for, you know, like sort of authoritative, patriarchal, warm and fuzzy roles like doctors and fathers in dramas and sitcoms.
In Beverly Hills Cop, he's the boss in that. He's the chief, the understanding but annoyed chief in Axel Foley's.
Right. And there's one of those in this movie also, but mm-hmm. it's a different guy altogether. But yeah, he kind of – that's kind of the role he normally played. So him being this sleazy executive, like conniving, murderous, conspiring with criminals, it's kind of an unusual turn for him. But because he does have that sort of patriarchal vibe about him, you can believe that people wouldn't realize that about him necessarily mm-hmm. or wouldn't assume that, oh, wow, he's evil. Like I think everyone in this is kind of slimy. Like anyone at OCP in their management is not great. No. But there's nothing about him that says, oh, yeah, he's actually way worse than everyone else. It's just like, oh, yeah, he's also a scumbag. But, you know, that's just to be expected.
If any of them had a slight amount of morality, they would not be in the executive boardroom. Like they wouldn't be there. So and Dick Jones is number two there. So he has to be the most powerful and the worst person. Though an interesting thing that struck me in the rewatching it last night before this was that for all of his problems and all of his like immorality, Dick Jones is like he always calls out RoboCop as like your monstrosity, this horrible thing. Like he's disgusted in a correct way that they would build a corpse, a robot around a corpse and make it walk around. That disgusts him. And he maybe is disgusted also because it's supplanting his project. But too, like he actually – he's one of the few people at OCP is like, this is wrong.
But on the other hand –
the natural revulsion.
Yeah. On the other hand, Murphy would not have been a corpse if it weren't for Dick Jones's collaboration with Clarence Boddicker, the guy who killed him. So
I think I realized he was in over his head like, oh, this is gross. I didn't want this.
Dick Jones, he's so – oh, God. He's what I think of when I think of the worst executives in the world. Like mm-hmm. he's such a perfect archetype of it. He has some of my favorite lines in the whole movie, his speech about like sometimes we even called him asshole. But there was always respect.
Yeah, right? Oh, exactly. Anyway, we're going to pivot to video now.
Yes, exactly. I love when he's –
snackable RoboCop content. Let's go. 2-minute videos.
He says like – replacement parts for 25 years. Who cared if it didn't work? That's so perfect. Like he's like, we have to sell this thing. We already sold it. The Ed 209 works. Like it's all about his presentation. His problem is that it doesn't work. But that is no problem for him. Like that, and that's executives in general of just like, well, the only problem is that my plan has no basis in reality. Who cares?
I don't exist in reality.
All right. And finally, the other major actor here is Kurtwood Smith, who plays Clarence Boddicker, the crime lord. And he's not your typical crime lord. He's not like bulking and imposing. He's like kind of a wiry guy, kind of balding.
He's got a Clint Howard look to him.
Yeah. I mean he's he actually, you know, with the glasses, I think he was deliberately made to look like Goring, Hermann Goring.
Oh, I see that. Yeah.
So he's kind of got this Nazi vibe to him, but at the same time he's like very self-confident and kind of charismatic even though he's slimy. And Kurtwood Smith himself, the actor, throws a lot of improvisation into the character, and many of the most memorable moments that the character has were just off the cuff, like him sticking that gum on the receptionist placard. Mm-hmm. And like that wasn't in the script. He was just like, and you know,
he's like,
you can keep the gum.
God, love that line. Yeah.
But yeah, he's a really interesting character played really well. And he gets what's coming to him. But at the same time, like if you can like a murderous drug lord, this is the kind of murderous drug lord you want to like.
You can appreciate the performance so much while not wanting to like or approve of his actions.
Yeah. Like in The Running Man, it's a fun villain who's also despicable, but it's a charismatic villain.
Yeah,
and
right.
Also,
I mean,
the dad on that 70s show for 10 years.
Yeah, like you know, the way he kills Bob Morton, just kind of strides into his home. He barely says anything, puts on the – you know, shoots the guy in the leg, puts on the DVD, and then just leaves a grenade sitting on his coffee table and walks off.
There's so much in just how he – the way he takes the pin out of the grenade with his tongue out first that then reaches for it. Like there's so much character just in that. Like he's – God. He's – or the way he walks backwards. He's like, well, I'm out of here, Dick. And Dick's like, well, you know, well, 2 million men. They need – got to get drugs. He just walks backwards to sit on the couch. It's so good. He's so – I mean – for him to be the bad guy in this film, you have to want to see him – the worst things happen to him. You have to truly hate him. And like he succeeds at being so detestable.
He's despicable.
though it's also funny too. We talk about like diversity in this film. Like he has a very diverse gang.
He does.
He is not a white supremacist gang. He's like has everybody in his gang.
He's got an Italian. He's got an African American. Mm-hmm. He's got an Asian American. Mm-hmm. He's got a guy with an extremely bad beard. Like it's just all the – you know, all, he hits all the notes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, let's see. That's pretty much it for the main cast. I will say that Peter Weller and Kurtwood Smith have both been in Star Trek a few times,
yeah,
which is awesome because occasionally you know I love watching Star Trek and I'm like, oh, I know that guy. I know the guy beneath the makeup there. That's awesome.
Yeah, Weller was the villain in the very bad Into the Dark.
Okay, but he was also the villain in the very – like the last two episodes of Enterprise, which were much better.
Oh, and a special shout out I want to say to Lisa Gibbons just basically playing herself,
which
makes her perfect for satire. She's – I feel like she was just told, no, just do it like you're hosting Entertainment Tonight. Just do that, Lisa. And she's like, okay, boom, hey. Except she's doing what's supposed to be – the joke is the real news would be played like Entertainment Tonight. But I mean we are so far beyond that now, so far beyond that.
So what year is RoboCop supposed to be set in? I feel like it's set in the future, but sometimes people say it's set in like the 80s.
I mean, there's
I feel like
no,
the year is 20XX in my opinion.
Yeah, there's no date put on it, but I feel like we see enough of what the world is then that it has to be like the 87 version of like 2003 or something like that, if I had to guess.
Yeah, technology is a little better than 1987, but not extremely better.
No flying cars or anything. Things
which
are
kind of like
dirty.
Now.
And they still have SD TVs, though so did Star Trek. Their future – nobody thought of HD televisions in the future then. So I don't think that's like a good time mark on it. But like the Star Wars system that's in the movie for several great jokes, I think that gives you a timestamp where they're like, well, it's 10 years from now or 15 years from now. They finally finished
it. SDI has finally happened.
Yeah.
I mean there is a date. I found it, but it's very arbitrary and that it is 2043.
Really? That far in the future?
Yeah. But again, that's 2043 to someone living in 1986. So I don't know what that means.
Mm. Okay. Maybe SDTVs are finally coming back. Great news, retro gaming fans.
Vinyl came back.
It did.
And you're buying SDTVs and monitors, right?
I am, right, but they're expensive and difficult.
Maybe OCP
and going to die.
Had a monopoly on it and suppressed HD televisions and controlled the market in that way.
Like the people who killed the electric car?
Mm-hmm.
This is Media Break. You give us 3 minutes and we'll give you the world.
Good morning. I'm Casey Wong with Jess Perkins. Top story, Pretoria. The threat of nuclear confrontation in South Africa escalated today when the ruling white military government of that besieged city-state unveiled a French-made neutron bomb and affirmed its willingness to use the 3-megaton device as the city's last line of defense.
And the president's first press conference from the Star Wars orbiting peace platform got off to a shaky start when power failed, causing a brief but harmless period of weightlessness for the visiting president and his staff. We'll be back in a moment.
Is it time for that big operation? This may be the most important decision of your life. So come down and talk to one of our qualified surgeons. Here at the Family Heart Center, we feature the complete Jarvik line. Series 7 Sports Heart by Jensen. Yamaha, you pick the heart. Extended warranties. Financing qualifies for health tax credit. And remember, we care.
So anyway, the future that RoboCop posits is grounded in the reality of 1987. And a big part of that is basically the Rust Belt has collapsed and is, you know, basically a miserable place to live, ridden by crime, overwritten by crime.
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of the kind of background premise here is that Detroit, a city that is emblematic of America's fall in the 80s from a powerhouse of industry to like a runner-up, a second best to Japan and foreign powers. It's going to be basically razed and rebuilt as Delta City, which is going to be a corporate-owned city that will house like 2 million people, create all kinds of jobs and industries, but pretty much be run stem to stern by Omni Consumer Products, the Amazon.com of this fictional world.
OCP. I mean, I was just in Seattle, and Seattle is not in the Rust Belt, but it is being ripped apart to build Amazon things everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, look at San Francisco and the way it's –
walking here today, I was like, boy, this is just RoboCop. Mm-hmm. I am just walking through Detroit of RoboCop.
Yeah,
here.
I mean that Renews It thing that they put up, the air freshener that's like 50 stories high, and it just makes, doesn't actually make the air smell better. That is straight out of Delta City.
When I can see the big billboards for like Yahoo as I walk by a camp of the unhoused, like it's you just see the poverty and the immense wealth all at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Reality is too on the nose.
Yep. It's not fun.
It's such hack crap.
This is repeating a thing I'm sure we said in the Running Man one too, but it's just like if they said in the movie Donald Trump was president in it, you'd be like, that's ridiculous,
yeah.
Neumeier.
A little too far. Yeah. Reel it back.
Yeah. But well, also OCP, like I love its name too. It's like Cop Inverted. Mm-hmm. It's so great. And
it's like XOF versus Fox. Wow. Are they evil?
And the way that the way they present OCP to you in the start at the presentation where Dick Jones says like we found places that are normally run as nonprofits and we saw an opening. Like that's just so
– Yeah. I don't know what the history of that idea was. I'm not sure if it had happened before, but this does happen now in which failing cities hire corporate consultants to basically run the city and try to make it profitable. So I don't know if that was happening in the 80s or if it was like a fantastical satirical idea, but it is happening now.
Well, you know, the idea of a corporate city dates back to what, the 1900s or even before
that? Like company
that.
Towns?
Yeah, company towns. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of the evolution of that, but in a more capitalistic, modern sort of way with super corporations.
Globalism and all that.
Yeah.
Well, and definitely in the 80s, we were already thinking about the military-industrial complex. And the, I mean, this was not the first movie to touch on those kind of themes either, even in a mainstream way. But definitely the message of privatization, like it was a warning, not a prediction. Like it was beginning to happen, all this privatization. Like it was also at the beginning of like the war on pretty – well, even deep into it, it had begun. The Reagan administration is entirely about a war on entitlements, as they would call it, which other people would call like social welfare and helping. Right. And all
or
this.
Hey, I actually have given a lot of money over my lifetime to Social Security. That money belongs to me.
Mm-hmm. But that's always the game of privatization, and OCP was like they're the most successful at privatization. They monetize hospitals, prisons, the army, which is just – that is everything.
Yeah,
now.
They're
that's
the American just... Zaibatsu. Mm-hmm. Anyway, everything about OCP really resonates with today, and the idea of OCP rebuilding Detroit as Delta City like resonates with the empty blue-collar promises you see today of let's prop up failing or irrelevant industries rather than reinventing them. Let's just keep things going and keep shoveling cash
in. The jobs are coming back, folks.
Yep.
A lot of people are saying.
Just wait for Delta City.
Yeah. I mean having grown up in the Rust Belt, every 4 years candidates come by and say they're coming back. We're going to bring it back, folks. Bringing back manufacturing. Still waiting for those jobs.
When the old man who runs OCP, he's really interesting to me because he's a very like kind of Walt Disney figure. Mm-hmm. Like he acts like he doesn't know what's going on at his company. He tries to put on a lot of innocence, even as like a corpse is being cleaned up. He's like, Dick,
that's
I'm very disappointed
in
you. Yeah, but he's more of an old school guy. Like the guys who are in charge of companies like Amazon or Twitter now, they're much more like Robert, the young guy who runs the RoboCop program. Like he's just this like cokehead asshole who talks up his plans for the future. He's like, we're going to eliminate crime in 40 days. Like how different is that from Elon Musk talking about how he's going to build a super train that's going to go
one person at a time is going to get places fast.
It's like old versus new robber barons in which like the Carnegies of the world feared death and hell. So they would give away tons of their money before they died. But now our modern ones believe they're immortal.
Yes.
So they're not doing any of that.
Well, put myself in an AI.
The old man does say he thinks Delta City is giving back, which I think that is like his Carnegie Hall type vision of what he wants to leave the world when he dies. But it's still seen through the eyes of like hyper controlling ultra capitalism. But he thinks it's like he's being good. Dick Jones doesn't even have that level of morality.
So Dick Jones is the president of the company, directly number two under the old man. We never find out his name. And he basically, we find out later in the movie, is in bed with the drug czar of the city, who is manufacturing cocaine and kind of consolidating as much power as possible. And, you know, they say old Detroit has a cancer that's crime, and they need to get rid of the crime to root it out before they can build Delta City. But at the same time, you have the number two of the company secretly working with the crime lords to maintain all this crime and keep cocaine flowing in the streets. So, you know, it's kind of like robbing Peter to pay Paul, maybe? I don't know. It's counter purposes, basically.
Well, and the cancer is OCP controlling every aspect of the government to withhold things because it would be better for their profit margins to have fewer cops or to withhold these things like that. That's the cancer. It's not – I mean, the bigger thing to say, the cancer is capital if you want to be like super lefty about it.
Yeah.
But the cancer is definitely OCP. They are the enemy of the city.
I was looking and I think the first for-profit prison was 1984, and that is a dystopian idea if there ever was one. So I feel like there are these burgeoning things that are happening around the time of the writing of this movie. They're thinking like, if jailing people is profitable, what else can we talk about now?
Right. So I don't want to get too much – I mean we've been talking a lot
about
the politics.
American flags in this room. Right? It's filling up with smoke.
Wow, I can't breathe. But all of this is basically just background to set the stage for the plot. And the plot is that a cop is murdered and is reborn as a cyborg super sentry for justice. But it's important to understand that OCP now has begun running the police. And they basically, the city of Detroit has said, we give up. Please, you know, make this city safe for everyone. And that way we can turn this all into Delta City. And OCP sees this as an opportunity to do other things, such as use the algorithm to decide, hey, who would be good for the RoboCop program, and send that person into an extremely dangerous area where they're definitely going to die. I think they said there's like 30 cops or something like that had died in the past few weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the movie, you kind of – in the locker room, like the scene of kind of the context there where Murphy is first meeting Lewis. You know, that scene is interrupted by them coming to collect the belongings from the locker of a cop who has fallen in the line of duty.
Yeah, yeah. It is about how dangerous it is to be a cop there because they're underfunded, but also Clarence Boddicker is a proud cop killer. He specifically wants to kill cops, not even do crime. He wants to kill cops, which I think is not an order from OCP. It's just him doing his job.
Right,
very
but he's
well.
Been given immunity by Dick Jones.
Though I was thinking about the politics of this movie too in comparison to like the more fascistic cop movies of the 80s. Specifically Death Wish 3 because friends of me and Bob, we've had them on the podcast, the Michael and Us podcast, they didn't want about Death Wish 3. That is especially a fascistic movie. But most movies about cops from the 80s were usually about how like the liberal justice system makes it too easy for the criminals and cops have their hands tied
by the
rules.
They're back on the streets.
Yeah. Now, there is like one scene of a lawyer saying, hey, if you give me this, I'll give the bail money now and just let him out. Like there is a couple mentions of that, but there's not really a comment that the problem for the cops isn't they have too many rules on them and that cops need to just take care of the sickos. That's not what the film posits. It posits that the cops are screwed because they have no money or support from the government like every other part of the society.
Well, they want to strike and you know they're basically told, hey, you're public servants. You shouldn't strike. And that's even reinforced with a newscast where someone is like, you know, they've got job security. What do they want to strike for?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have job security. So anyway, this is the context in which Alex Murphy and Ann Lewis are sent out to hunt down Clarence Boddicker and bring him in. And this results in Lewis getting temporarily knocked out, pushed off a ledge, and Murphy shoots a criminal and then is gunned down in cold blood by Boddicker's gang, mm-hmm. who take great delight in just mutilating him with weapons. And then, like, surprisingly, he doesn't die immediately, and they just keep insane. Pumping him full of bullets. And eventually Boddicker just like puts a bullet in his head, and you get to see like a brain chunk fly out, you know, and more of the graphic violence.
Mm-hmm. In the unrated version, it's insane how long they shoot him. When I watched, I was like, wow, how is he possibly alive even a little bit when the medics find him?
Yeah, I mean it's a little unrealistic, but hey, whatever. So he is pressed into, much against his will, or, you know, because he's dead, so who cares?
He signed the forms.
Yep, he signed the
forms. They own his corpse.
He is turned into RoboCop. Basically, his face and spine are attached to a cyborg suit. And this is a substitute project for the original intended automated robot cop system that Dick Jones had come up with, the ED-209. What does ED stand for or something? It's anyway,
something
the ED-209 is basically a bipedal tank. It looks like Metal Gear Rex. It's very anime looking. Like, it looks like it came straight out of a Japanese cartoon from the 80s. Very cool design. It even had, you know, roars like a dinosaur or screeches like an upset cat.
It's a very dark idea that it's like, we can't perfect the AI on this robot, so we'll just steal human brains, mm-hmm. and like consciousness is to power them.
Enforcement yep. droid. That's what
that's
it stands
it, yes.
for. Yes.
So yeah, basically an upstart executive, like junior vice president or whatever, Robert Morton, comes up with the RoboCop plan and pushes it at the old man when the ED-209 demo fails spectacularly and murders another junior executive.
I love that old scene. The way the people react when the tech demo is going wrong, like I think you better put it down. He puts down the gun and saying, you have 10 seconds to comply. And the way they flip open the top of the controls, they start all working feverishly like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, it's real panic. As much as this movie is cynical about kind of the way the corporation behaves, like, there is actual panic and dismay when this guy is gunned down in cold blood. But, you know, Morton sees it as an opportunity, and Jones
takes
it personally.
That's life in the big city, man. That's how he puts it.
Yep. So, you know, Jones takes it personally, and especially personally when he hears Morton talking trash about him in the bathroom. But anyway, Murphy becomes RoboCop and is basically a face and a spine stuck into a really cool titanium Kevlar laminated body armor powered by robotics and technology. And you kind of get to see like Murphy coming back into consciousness as RoboCop from his perspective.
That montage is one of the greatest in a movie. Like, it covers like a year in real time just through flashes of what you mm-hmm. see through. There's so much great first-person perspective footage in general in the film. Like, right before he dies, you're seeing one of the most horrifying like real things you could see, which is your first-person perspective of doctors yeah. operating on you or a person as they're dying. And you're – I don't know. It filled me with dread thinking like, is this what I'll – the last thing I'll see too? Like, this is horrible.
But then you come back and a pretty scientist with large glasses kisses your retina or whatever.
Happy New Year to
Happy
me.
New
yeah.
Year.
No, and also just hearing he's like – them so heartlessly cutting off his arms. Like,
I told you to lose everything.
Yeah.
Like, who cares about his arm?
And they also are like, well, we can delete his memory. He's not even going to remember this. Oh, okay, then who fucking cares? Let's just do whatever we want with this corpse. Like, that's how heartless everyone is there. Sorry, I'm being very blue in this episode, but it's such an R-rated film.
Anyway, so RoboCop is also very manga anime looking. He's silver and black, very bulky, but also like there's a sleekness about his design at the same time. And, you know, he does have that robotic movement that I mentioned earlier where he kind of leads with his head and everything is very stiff and deliberate. And, you know, he's not defeating crime when he goes out on the streets by basically outmaneuvering it. He's basically just indestructible. So mm-hmm. people, you know, open up on him with handguns and stuff, and it doesn't affect him. And so he's able to – yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah. He basically is extreme force that, you know, responds to kind of mundane crimes like burglaries and stuff like that, just smashing people, shooting people. There's a sexual assault that he interrupts by shooting through the legs of a hostage and blasting the criminal behind the hostage in the crotch.
Mm-hmm. RoboCop loves psychics.
Yep.
Violence psychics.
Yep.
The right before that scene starts, the way he enters with his shadow projected too, like that's such an iconic shot. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's just disproportionate retribution all around. Like that is the escalation that's happening here.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that ends with the criminals getting basically military-grade weapons from Dick Jones and, you know, things that can blow up an entire storefront in a single shot.
It's another of my favorite lines where he's like, you got any military-grade stuff? Like – we practically are the military. Mm-hmm. Like we make everything for them. We just are. And RoboCop, he's good at fixing things, but he has to know about them when they happen, which so he's just a level of response. And also when I see him there, I just think about like how much money he is and like – would he be better as a peacekeeper if the money spent on RoboCop was like 100 new officers?
But that's not great PR.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's only taking care of like petty crime in the beginning too, or just like a regular non like supervillain style crimes.
Mm. Yeah, it's seriously like a dude holding up a convenience store, which you know that's bad. That guy needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
But maybe don't send in essentially you know like a small tank with a person's face inside of it to stop a convenience store burglar.
Though now you talk about the militarization of police forces, like they're way beyond RoboCop now.
Oh yeah, like Lewis's uniform and Murphy's uniforms, they're so streamlined. They don't have like tactical gear and they're not carrying AR-15s. It's so underpowered. How can they get by?
Oh, you mentioned Rom the Space Knight. That's on the comic book shelves at the convenience store.
As is Iron Man.
Yeah, I love that.
So let's see. The important thing to know about RoboCop is that he is powered by baby food and limited by a variant of Asimov's laws. He has four directives: serve the public trust, protect the innocent, uphold the law, and secret.
Yeah, the secret guy that they plug that in so well too. You just see like classified, like it's a stupider movie would have had somebody say like, oh, what's that fourth thing? No need to ask. Or like they would have said it out loud. Instead, it's just shown on screen, not commented on, and it lets you remember it and think about it later.
Yeah, it's a nice surprise when it pops up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know the HUD that he has is basically like a green version of the Terminator's HUD.
Mm.
So, you know, it's kind of RoboCop's equivalent of fuck you, asshole.
He's all the first person stuff there. It's a early first person shooter in those bits there.
There was eventually a RoboCop first-person shooter, and it was just a natural extension of this. But, you know, the plot kind of comes to a head as Jones has Boddicker murder Morton for dissing him and basically disgracing him. But, you know, the RoboCop program still goes on, but Murphy eventually figures out that he is Murphy, thanks in part to Lewis, and also encountering one of the criminals who gunned him down who recognizes one of his catchphrases. So then he, you know, uses his Chekhov's data spike to scan the police department computers and basically track down Boddicker's gang.
That's some beautiful puppeteering when his fake arm pops up in the
– he does the Wolverine thing.
Yeah,
I love that.
Snicked.
Yeah, which it's also – he's saying that to the police nerd who's like, hey, you can't be in here. You can't be floom. What do you think of that, dork? I'm going to do what I want like that. The records place is really good. And now, too, the face-matching tech he's got. Like, Amazon gives the military way better face-matching stuff than that.
Yeah, he needs to have Ring built into his face.
Oh, God.
Anyway, everything comes to a head as, you know, eventually he realizes, like, hey, Boddicker did this. He takes in – he, like, finds Boddicker and guns down all of his co-conspirators. There's, like, another crime lord that he's working with. And beats the crap out of him. And Boddicker's like, wait a minute. I'm supposed to have immunity. I'm working with Dick Jones, you idiot. Which, of course, RoboCop records because he's got Ring built into his face. Mm. And, you know, once he takes in Boddicker, Jones realizes, wow, I've been implicated. This really sucks. So that sets into motion like the plan to get rid of RoboCop and clear Jones's name.
The Coke Factory shootout is one of the best like action sequences ever. I love it so much. Especially now I can just so appreciate the practical effects of just like it's explosions. Those are real guys falling down, like things blowing up everywhere.
And also knowing what's happening at all times.
Yeah.
Like, I know where this person is. I know why they're there. I know why this is going on.
Yeah, it's great because, I mean, you kind of see it in a sense from RoboCop's point of view where he goes in. He lines up all of his shots, like he kind of locks on basically
he's got
to his
aim
targets.
Assist.
Yeah. And so he just starts walking through and he's just like taking out the targets that he's lined up.
Yeah, always posing. Love it. He's like voguing almost at this point.
Almost. So he looks really cool while he's taking down crime.
Yeah.
But then he goes in to take down Dick Jones and Dick Jones is like –
he throws in through three windows in a row. It's beautiful.
Yeah. He definitely takes a little revenge on Boddicker. But Jones eventually lets Boddicker free, and when RoboCop goes in to stop Boddicker and arrest – or to arrest Jones, that's when Jones reveals the fourth directive, which is you can't arrest an OCP executive.
Mm-hmm.
And so while Murphy RoboCop is stun-locked by his fourth directive, Ed 209 storms in and tries to blow up RoboCop and he escapes.
I love his acting on his like, I'm being taken down. Like, great.
But they didn't think to make ED 209 capable of going downstairs. And so RoboCop is saved by a poor design decision, which is extremely in keeping with the whole Ed 209 project. Like, it doesn't feel like a cop-out or cheap. Like, you actually think – oh yeah, they did not see this design all the way through. So yes, of course, this thing's just going to tumble down the stairs.
It's like how Teslas explode. And they won't run over Elon Musk. You can try. They'll just stop.
But the way it goes from being this fearsome monster that's chasing RoboCop and smashing him all around the hallway and shooting these like nuke of these huge missiles at him, then it goes from this fearsome thing to just this like timid thing that's like reaching a foot down like and when
so
it falls
tentative.
On its back, it's just so like pitiful.
Yeah, it's pathetic. But at the same time, you know, it also has missiles, so you don't feel too bad for it.
And the sequence too, another of the greatest sequences in the film is when the cops confront him and they're just told like, we got to shoot him right now. And other cops are like, no, he's a cop. We can't do it. They're like, we have orders, which who from OCP because that's who owns – they own law. They own the legal system. So his being shot, like his slow crawl as he's being shot, his arm
reaching
up.
Well,
like,
he's, you know, he's actually – protecting the one exposed part of his face in the entire time. Like he knows that's his vulnerable point.
But the spotlight on him as he's crawling, like it's like the passion of RoboCop. Like it's a beautiful sequence.
Like, it's very Christ-like, you're right.
Yeah. Well, Lewis, he walks on water later in the movie too. So
Lewis, you know, manages to get him into the back of a car somehow and they escape. Although he forgot to turn off his Find My iPhone aspect. And so Jones has a tracker on him and knows exactly where he is. So he sends Boddicker's gang to get after him. After they blow up part of a city storefront, the cops have gone on a strike. Mm-hmm. So it's basically chaos in Detroit. And amidst that, Boddicker's gang gets extremely cool military-grade weapons that can just blow up a car in a single shot.
It can blow up a 6,000
SUX.
Yeah.
So they go and they confront RoboCop in a junkyard and there's a horrible mutant creature from toxic waste.
Oh, so much toxic waste.
Yeah, so much.
Love it. That puts you right in the mid-80s with a toxic waste joke.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that the big shootout is where he was killed like that. I mean – that's economical from a set perspective that they can film in the same place twice, but also just, you know, it's like poetry. It rhymes.
Right. Okay, thanks, George.
But it does, you know, it's where Murphy's rebirth happens where he's killed because he's rebuilt, but he's – everybody tells him, you're a product. You're not a person. You're owned by OCP. You're not – everybody tells him that. Like, we own you. You're not a human being anymore. He – by taking his helmet off, he becomes Murphy again.
Right.
So it's where he becomes human once more. He also stops eating baby food there, and
right.
he does his target practice.
Yeah, he has to relearn how to fire his weapon systems because he doesn't have the aim assist anymore. So Lewis helps him basically reclaim his humanity that way.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so he ends up trashing the gang, and they try to trash him, and they almost succeed. But then he whips out the data spike, and it turns out it's also good as a weapon, not just for accessing computers.
Mm-hmm.
And he rips out a big old chunk of Boddicker's throat.
So the confrontation with Clarence, the final one at the steel mill where he's trapped under all the stuff and Boddicker's stabbing him. I was at the in Akihabara in Japan, one of my first trips there, at the Kotobukiya store, which is an amazing store. If you're ever there, it's a really great figure store. They have a section for American things, and that included some RoboCop toys. And then they had an SD TV there playing RoboCop while I was there, and it was that scene.
Oh, wow.
And he says, "Sayonara, RoboCop," and I'm seeing this in Tokyo. I'm like, man, this feels magical, this moment here. And then just seeing the blood explode out of Clarence Boddicker's neck.
Just in a store.
Yes, yeah.
All right. Good times. Anyway, so the culmination of the movie, it's the last time someone yelling, "You're fired," was heartwarming. RoboCop goes in to confront Dick Jones at the OCP boardroom after blowing up the Ed-209 with one of those cool military-grade weapons that he stole from Boddicker's gang. And, he shows that Dick Jones wants to play this town like a fiddle out of hell or whatever.
Well, he reveals he killed another executive, which is the ultimate crime once you killed another executive.
It's like killing five regular people.
So he gets fired, and that means RoboCop can shoot him, and he does. Mm.
And
there's a really weird special effect. Like when he's falling, his arms are way too long. What's going on?
I mean,
there?
It's a puppet. It's a puppet.
That's a kind of a – I mean, the effects in this movie are fun, but that's just a kind of a laugh out loud moment.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, they definitely learned their lesson with Die Hard and actually had Alan Rickman fall.
His fall is a great one.
We'll talk about that in the Die Hard episode.
I would compare the fall here to Jimmy Stewart falling out of the window in Rear Window. It's like a very bad rear projection special effect.
Yep.
But this was another little detail I noticed in my most recent watch. Like the gun that Dick Jones pulls out to threaten the old man and hold him hostage, it is the same gun from the Ed-209 tech demo at the start of the movie. It's in the little box, and it's the same big fancy Glock or whatever it is.
Okay.
So it's almost like this is the executive boardroom test of RoboCop, just like Ed-209's was, but RoboCop works and passes his test.
Right, except he works too well, and when the old man asks his name, he doesn't say RoboCop. He says Murphy.
Yeah, which
– that's the end.
And then boom, RoboCop name. One of the best –
it's very contradictory. Is he Murphy or is he RoboCop or is he both?
Well, that's what sucks about the sequels too, is that they kind of have to – he ends the film by reclaiming his humanity, and he should never be RoboCop again. That's what – but – for the film series to continue, he must be RoboCop. And in two, he gets Metroid, basically.
It kind of reminds me of The Matrix, how, it ends with a very definitive phone call from Neo, I'm coming to get you. But then the movies kind of fumble that, the sequels.
It's weird that the RoboCop brand outside of this first movie is being RoboCop is cool. It is awesome to be RoboCop. And shooting criminals and being ruthless to criminals is an awesome thing that RoboCop does. And really, the movie is an indictment of the criminal justice system having a for-profit motive.
Mm-hmm.
And this entire silly robot story is just a way to tell that story.
And also, he is a man whose existence is now hell.
Yeah, yeah. It's it brings up issues of what is the soul? Well, let's watch RoboCop and figure that out.
It's a state of living death, and it's also a comment on the commodification of a person to the point that he is a product. He literally becomes a product of a corporation. And also all the comments on the media too, we didn't even touch on the
commercials,
fake commercials, the TV
I'll buy
shows.
That for a dollar.
So Smash TV ripped off that part from RoboCop and everything else from The Running Man.
Mm-hmm. Yep. God, the Nukem commercial, the Yamaha sports heart, all the – oh, God.
The goofy claymation dinosaur, it just – thrown in the middle of the movie in such a weird dissonance there.
And also another thing that like struck me about how it feels like now, they just tell you these things that are on the news. They're like, well, that's horrible, right? Anyway, let's move on. We got to – like they tell a story about how like – well, the Star Wars machine went bad and killed 113 people today, including two former presidents.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, more up. Let's watch a commercial. Like they, you don't even think about it. Like things just happen, and people say, like, "Oh man, looks like they put a nuke in Acapulco now. Nuts! I was going to go on vacation there. Oh well." And you just kind of move on from it. You can't think about things too much, or else you'd be miserable.
That
in
is
this
2019.
Reality.
Actually, that is 2017 through 2019 in a nutshell. Everything is terrible, but everything is terrible is happening so quickly that you don't have time to process.
Yeah.
I was going to say, so our last one of these movies podcasts was The Running Man. And this conceivably could have come out within a week of RoboCop if it wasn't delayed until November. It would have been interesting to have these two movies saying similar things about similar ideas happening at the exact same time in history.
That's
the exact
a double
same
feature,
week. Yeah.
Man.
All right. Well, I'm sure there are quite a few listeners that we've annoyed with all this talk of politics and symbolism and so forth. But you don't get to hear a lot of that on Retronauts because video games just don't very often embrace and like tackle topics this deep and with this much conviction and foresight. If they did, you'd hear a lot more of this conversation. But that's why it's fun to occasionally tackle a classic movie because sometimes they knew a lot more than they even realized.
I don't think we're overreaching. This is the text of
RoboCop.
Not.
Yeah.
So if you have a problem with that, it's what the movie is saying.
Yeah.
It has a
take
point
it up with reality, pal.
I think the movie viewer should make their own decision about what they're watching.
See, that's –
they're very fine opinions on both sides.
That's the problem. Like at the very least, Kojima tries to make statements like this. I don't think he's
– I don't think he's any good at it.
He's definitely not as skilled as RoboCop the film is at making these statements. Sometimes he's good. He can be good at it.
Yeah, I mean he has an anti-war message and then you'll play a game about war. It'll have like a quote on a loading screen like, "War is bad sometimes. Anyways, enjoy your war game."
Dick Cheney said this about war. Like, oh, cool. Thanks, Call of Duty.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to Death Stranding's attempts, to be completely honest.
We shall see. We shall see.
Anyway.
At the very least, he got to meet famous people. And isn't that the real point of making video games?
The real Death Stranding was inside our relationships with Hollywood actors all along.
Instead of Snake Eater, it should be called Starfucker. Metal Gear Solid 6, Starfucker.
The award-winning Go Nintendo podcast covers the latest Nintendo news while also diving into what's hot in pop culture, music trivia, hands-on impressions, and so much more. Hopefully we can make you laugh, too. You'll find new episodes of the Go Nintendo podcast on the Greenlit Podcast Network every single week.
Hey folks, it's Asif Khan, CEO, Editor-in-Chief, over there at ShaqNews.com. Give a listen to the ShaqCast, the official Shaq News podcast of Shaq News, over there on the Greenlit Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm Ray, and this is my friend Alex.
Hi.
And we do a show called No More Whoppers.
Do you want pins and stickers? Because we don't have them.
Like a broken keyboard, we're out of control.
Check it out. You got Wah Wah Wah, Poet Hojo. How about a No More Whoa?
Join us every month or so on the Greenlit Podcast Network.
All right, so we are going to talk about some video games, specifically RoboCop video games.
I saw this. All I saw was Ocean, and I just wanted to just turn off my computer.
Yeah, that's what Ocean games were all about. Stop playing right now. But actually, the original RoboCop game was created by Data East.
That's the one I did play a lot of.
And that debuted in the arcades. That was a game that I played many times and never got past the first level because it's really hard and kind of awkward and not very fun. But it is cool that you are RoboCop. And at some point in the stage, you pause and your gun comes out of your leg and then you start gunning people down and then Ed 209 shows up. And there's more to the game after that, it turns out. I watched a video playthrough of it. But it's all pretty much just the same thing over and over. It's like walking in a straight line. There's tons of enemies showing up and attacking you. It's really meant to suck your quarters down and kill you off as quickly as possible.
One of my favorite RoboCop pieces of merch I own. I only own two RoboCop action figures, but my favorite is from NECA Toys. It's a RoboCop, but colored in the NES color palette of the Data East game. And he's in like a fake box. His toy box looks like a facsimile of the NES game box as well. It's really cool.
Yeah, they had that gimmick going for a little while. There was also, what, like the Contra guys?
Yeah, like Jason, the purple Jason was
Batman,
awesome.
There's a purple Batman that looks like the Konami Batman. It's really cool, yeah.
Sunsoft,
sorry.
Well, I guess Konami did do one later.
But it is the purple Michael Keaton one from Sunsoft. You're okay, right, though, yeah.
Anyway, so RoboCop, the arcade game, is kind of a brawler, kind of a shooter. It's basically like Bad Dudes.
I was thinking Bad Dudes
were a single character who was a robot and had a gun. But it is pretty much like you're walking in a straight line and things are coming at you from all directions. And unless you have the level memorized, you're going to take a lot of damage. And then you get further into it and you do have a little bit of verticality where you're going up some staircases. But really, it's pretty much just like walking in a straight line. You can't jump and shoot, I think.
You
can in the arcade, but not in the – right. In the NES game, you're stuck on the ground, which really limits the gameplay.
You should take no damage from regular bullets, though, in the game either.
It takes an entire police SWAT team to even hurt him. Mm-hmm. And that's after he has a run-in with a walking tank with miniguns and missiles.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, the Superman video game problem. How do you create a game about someone who is effectively invincible to trash mobs? Apparently, you take a lot of damage from trash mobs and put in more quarters, please. There are some fun references to the movie. Like every other stage ends and then there's a bonus level. That's a shooting gallery, and the arcade game does the cross reticle, you know, like the green square with the cross lines over it. And if you score well enough, then you get extra lives and things like that. It turns out some of the bosses later in the game are not just Ed 209. Some of them are Boddicker's van. There's a wrecking ball that's kind of, I guess, based on the crane in the junkyard. There's a lot of junkyard imagery. There is an actual junkyard stage that probably is like the most referential part of the game to the movie. Like you're moving along and occasionally girders will fall at you, like, you know, junk girders dropped from the crane. But it's still a very repetitive game and it looks really cool. It was, you know, I don't think it was a game that was really meant to be played more than a level or two. It was just meant for you to be like, oh, RoboCop, I know that. I love that. That's cool.
You tell your mom to rent it.
Okay, and, well, I'm done.
Exactly.
Well, I'm talking about the arcade game.
Oh, the arcade game, yeah.
Just the arcade. It was like, you know, 25 cents to briefly play as RoboCop and die. Mm-hmm. And that's fun.
Exactly
I made it
what
to
I did,
it
yeah.
Yeah. So in that sense, I guess it was successful. The final battle does take place in the OCP boardroom and you pass in front of the Delta City model and then you have to punch Jones to save the old man.
Oh, so come on. It's the one thing. You're supposed to shoot him.
Maybe you are supposed to shoot him, but in the video they punched him.
Boo.
There is a little bit of contextual control in here. When you have your gun out, if an enemy comes up close to you, you'll punch them instead of shooting them. So,
that's fun.
Yeah, it's a little metal sluggish.
He's not much known for his CQC, RoboCop.
No.
Anyway, there were a few different adaptations of this game. None of them were like exactly the arcade game. They varied to some degree. There was an American PC version developed by Quicksilver and published by Ocean, which was pretty closely based on the arcade game. There was the NES and Game Boy game. This was produced by SAS Cicada, under license from Ocean, under license from Data East. SAS Cicada was a company that often collaborated with Data East on things like tag team wrestling and other games. So they had a long-standing relationship with Data East. So this is pretty much a Data East game. But even though it is a Data East adaptation of the Data East arcade game, it's like the levels are pretty different. The controls are pretty much the same, but the levels are much more built around the progression of the movie. So there's like a city hall scene, which is not in the arcade game, and you actually do have to like save the mayor or whatever from the guy at the end. Mm-hmm. And there is a part where you punch through a wall, so you know.
Okay. I do not even remember playing it, but I'm sure I told my mom to rent it for me.
Yeah, I never actually played this one, but Bob, it sounds like you did.
I had a friend with it. I don't think we've ever made a lot of progress, and I had no context for the movie RoboCop, so it's very fuzzy to me. But it just seemed like a B-list NES action game. Nothing fantastic, but not terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this one was at least just licensed from Ocean but developed in Japan. So I think, you know, some of the later RoboCop games were actually developed by Ocean, so they were bad.
In Japan, they were fans of RoboCop. He was a big hit there.
Yeah, I mean, he is extremely, like I said, anime looking. Mm-hmm. Ed 209 and RoboCop both are just like straight out of 80s anime.
You can see RoboCop in multiple Japanese commercials.
What's he selling, like fridges or?
One's a fridge and one is fried chicken.
I thought fried chicken was part of it. Yeah.
Yes. Though, RoboCop's favorite food.
Does the drum come out of his leg?
I can't recall. I do recall, though, that he's like extra chrome. Like he's the shiniest RoboCop ever for the model they made.
Hmm. So, you know, in addition to the American Quicksilver PC game and the NES game, there was a European PC game which was, again, pretty much the same thing, but it had different enemies, different stages. It had different minigame modes. Like you sometimes had to save hostages in a first-person view mode.
Ah.
So it kind of took the bonus mode from the arcade, shoot the criminal stages.
Them in the crotch in this game, though.
No, you just have to shoot them, basically. And the like the ZX Spectrum game actually has multiple kinds of ammunition, like piercing ammo and explosive ammo. So there's a little bit of variety to it. I'd also say in some senses it's a better game because it's only like 15 minutes long if you play it from start to finish, whereas the other games are more like half an hour. These are all extremely repetitive. There's not much variety. It's just like walk, punch, shoot, keep moving, the same basic enemies. They get cheaper and harder as you go along, but it never really changes up. So having less of that I think is actually a good thing.
15 minutes is all you need of that type
of game,
I think.
It really is.
Yeah.
That was it for the original RoboCop adaptations until like 2003 when Titus made an Xbox game that's a first-person shooter. And I remember this coming out and it did not review well. Mm. It seems very dated for a 2003 first-person shooter. It was very strange for the RoboCop license to suddenly resurface like 15 years after the movie was relevant on Xbox of all things. I really don't understand. I think it was probably just a cheap license and Titus was all about like – you know, they also released Blues Brothers games like Blues Brothers 2000.
Yeah.
So this was not – I think – did Titus also do Superman 64?
Yeah. It's like – sort of like when you see an E.T. game in 2004, you're like –
yeah,
that
Game Boy
like
Advance E.T. like planner or whatever. Yeah.
Or like a Heathcliff game now or like – or Garfield. The lower hanging fruit – though now Garfield's a Viacom thing, so probably won't be licensed. But it's like one of those – gettable licenses that
right.
then gets made into
like
a thing.
Oh, people maybe remember this, and we didn't have to pay a lot of money for
RoboCop's
it.
RoboCop's so. That much? We can do that.
Yeah, I can. I've got pocket change.
Though it just being on Xbox, my immediate assumption is that Microsoft was usually a little looser with on quality of games they'd approve that would go on there as opposed to GameCube or PlayStation 2 at the time. So
that might have something to do with it.
The only other RoboCop thing I remember related to video games was after that, I think it was 2011 or 10, Xbox Avatar close of RoboCop. And
was it original RoboCop or was it – okay. Not the remake RoboCop.
I bought a full RoboCop outfit for my avatar. I bought the hat and I bought a t-shirt that says I'd buy that for a dollar, which I think did cost a dollar. Or it might have cost two actually, I think.
Whoa, what?
And now those avatar clothes are lost like tears in the rain.
Wrong movie, but yes.
But yeah, then they remade RoboCop and Total Recall within like 18 months of each other. Nobody saw them. Nobody cares. Nobody likes them.
I did not see Total Recall, but I did see RoboCop on cable or something, and it was completely missable. Like it was a thing that happened, and it wasn't terrible, but it also didn't really have a point.
Well, you can't make that kind of RoboCop movie now, and they just it just got made because it's a known name. It's a franchise name. That's the only thing that gets made now.
It was made to extend a copyright or something.
That too. Yeah. And who, I mean, MGM or Sony or somebody was like, oh, we, well, it was an Orion film.
Yeah, it was
originally.
Orion. So who owns Orion now?
Oh, boy.
It's probably.
People own Orion.
Yes. The stars in the sky.
I mean, my Blu-ray was put out by Fox, but I think it might have partial ownership, which that would make it a Disney thing now. But who even knows?
I can't wait for the Disney reboot.
Well, it's like Terminators.
Oh, when will RoboCop enter the Marvel Cinematic Universe? How exciting.
I think it's Sony.
Oh, Sony.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I don't know.
And yet it showed up on Xbox, not PlayStation.
Spider-Man meets RoboCop.
Mm.
Well, so, you know, I have to say for being a monolithic corporate company, Sony doesn't do enough conversation within itself. It is not as sleek a machine as Disney is. It's more Ed 209 to Disney's RoboCop as far as corporate
It does fall downstairs occasionally. I remember PlayStation 3. So do we want to talk about like substantial RoboCop references in pop culture? I feel like I see RoboCop references all over the place, but I can't actually name any. They're just out there.
Gizmoduck.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is a RoboCop reference. Kids loved RoboCop. I believe Fenton Crackshell, he is not killed and turned into a robot. He says his code word. He turns into Gizmoduck. Blathering blatherskites. So.
That's the funniest thing to me, to think of Carl Barks seeing his original creation then get transformed into a RoboCop pastiche by the creators of the 80s.
That's the one addition to DuckTales I do like.
I love
Bubba
Gizmoduck.
Go to hell. Gizmoduck is cool.
Webby, no thanks. In video games, when you see like a cyborg guy who is good at shooting people, like it's definitely the seed was planted by RoboCop. Like there's a million of those. We already mentioned like Raiden from Metal Gear for sure. But there's tons of them out there. But yeah, it's not as obvious as say a running man smashed.
Right, or like alien references.
Oh God, all
like the Giger
stuff,
Xenomorph.
Yeah.
That's one thing. But RoboCop is a little more. I don't know. Like it kind of pulled together a lot of ideas that were already sort of in the zeitgeist at the time.
I mean, it's heartless, violent version of the future. That definitely inspired a lot of people too. But everybody just like they picked up that, but they just left commentary and satire to the side or like that. Mm-hmm. Or also that doesn't make you as much money. I think they saw like, well, RoboCop's certainly commercial as a satire, but boy, it was way more commercial if we drop that satire and just sell a toy.
I think you get more Terminator parodies because it's more immediately identifiable, especially with an accent, and it could be more fun that way. I don't know. I feel like I see more Terminator parodies than RoboCop.
Mm. Mm-hmm. But though I mean like the arm can – like his gun the way
it's stored.
Yeah, that autocannon is just insane. And plus all of the – I do think as stupid as it is, his like many modifications in the RoboCop sequels, like his glider
– Jetpack
thing. Like yeah, that – I think that had some inspiration in or inspired some video games too. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more of just a flavor and a permission it gave to other creators.
Yeah, like Deus Ex. I never asked for this.
Gizmoduck came the closest. And actually, I just found out his first name was RoboDuck, which is why he has an R on his body.
Oh.
So he was going to be RoboDuck.
Boy,
they said, oh, we're flying a little too close to the sun with that one. All right.
Too spicy for Disney to reference that movie.
I love in the movie that everybody's like all these people keep saying like, hey, Robo, go Robo. Like of all the things that carried over from the film into reality, no one calls RoboCop Robo. We all just call him RoboCop. Like that didn't become a nickname like Spidey.
I mean, Robo is the robot from Chrono Trigger. So like that's his name. That is who that is.
I do think, though, Deus Ex's vision of the future is definitely a RoboCop-style vision of it, too.
It even takes place in Detroit, doesn't it? Human Revolution does, right?
Part of it does. Then you go to Hong Kong.
And, you know, this is kind of an irrelevant way to wrap up the podcast, but the whole, like, vision of industrial Michigan City automotive former powerhouse being renovated, rebuilt. Like that was a real thing that was happening in around this time. I remember, you know, I was born in Flint, Michigan and went back there to visit family every couple of summers when I was a kid. And I remember in 1984, I want to say 84 or 86 was the year that they launched Six Flags Auto World, which was an amusement park that was actually more of like a museum based around Flint's history of the auto. It was a weird choice, a weird idea. Mm-hmm. But the idea was that it was supposed to be like, you know, drawing tourists into Flint and revitalizing the city, creating new jobs. And it was a huge flop within a year.
Yeah.
And around the same time, they were renovating like the riverfront and, you know, trying to build up the city and make it like a tourist destination again. And I remember, you know, going to this nicely manicured, you know, recently rebuilt, reconstructed riverfront and like waterway, and it was really nice. But, you know, now when you think Flint and river, you think of something completely different.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, just like the Delta City project never actually took off in the RoboCop series.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it didn't work out.
No, I know about that stuff. I didn't grow up there, but the Michael Moore film Roger and
yes,
Me
indeed.
Details it perfectly. Like one of the most eerie and horrifying parts of that movie is when he goes to that Six Flags Auto World and he's seeing like a robot man singing a song with the robot that replaced him at his job. And they're like, oh, I love making auto parts. Like it's so – that is dystopian right there. As dystopian as anything in RoboCop.
You can't replace podcasters though.
Nope. No, the algorithm can't do podcasts.
Within my lifetime you can. I'm counting on that.
They're trying. The Dick Joneses of the world are trying, Bob. They're working hard on that. yeah, I definitely think the movie has an influence on games, but not as obvious as it is in other things for sure. But yeah, I think the violence too of it, like I think it did give permission for things to be more violent afterwards
and
too.
The personality of RoboCop as this just ruthless law enforcement officer that follows orders only exists within the context of one movie. Like he has to overcome that. That's his arc. So it's weird that that is the reference point everything makes when he can only really – it's like there's one story to tell in that world and they've told it, period. Mm-hmm. And that's it basically.
But then there was a franchise.
Yeah.
There was money to be made. Yep. Anyway, so this was a sort of video game related episode of Retronauts, but you know, still a kind of foundational moment of 80s pop culture, one that's widely referenced and hugely influential, even though we didn't come up with a lot of video game references. Just like the ideas put in here, the aesthetics – very, very pervasive throughout pop culture, and it's definitely a movie whose influence was kind of outsized compared to its initial theatrical run. Like it was a success, but not a huge just blockbuster smash. But the ideas that it presented, the aesthetics it presented were very compelling and interesting. And even if people didn't necessarily grok the social commentary, the political commentary, they still were like, RoboCop is cool. So that's what we have.
I mean, that's –
and there were some video games.
And that's, you know, a similar curse struck the spiritual sequel to this movie, Starship Troopers. Like it influenced a whole lot of Space Marine video games, but with not as much of the commentary.
Not really questioning what was happening.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're bugs. You kill them. The end.
Like, oh, well. Anyway, satire is dead and RoboCop helped kill it. So that's it for this episode. Thanks everyone for listening. This has been Retronauts. We'll be back in a week with an episode that is more directly about video games, but we'll occasionally do more of these episodes that are tangentially related to video games. I mean, this is all part of the pop culture stew in which we came of age and are therefore very relevant to our interests and your interests as a person listening to a podcast about our interests. Yes. Anyway, Retronauts is a podcast that can be found at retronauts.com, on iTunes and other podcast services, and can be supported for $3 a month or more on patreon.com/retronauts, which gives you early access to each episode at a higher bitrate with no advertisements. And, you know, we are basically entirely supported pretty much by listeners and patrons. So if you want to keep the show going and keep us able to eat and drink and have a place to live, that would be great. But, you know, we'll be back in a week with another show no matter what, because that is what we do. As for myself, you can find me on Twitter as GameSpite and on YouTube as Jeremy Parrish. You can watch videos about video games much more so than this episode of the podcast. Anyway, Henry, where can we find you on the internet?
Hey, thanks for having me on. I love talking about RoboCop and I love talking about pop culture things in general on podcasts, which you can hear me do.
And politics.
Oh, gosh, yes. On the Talking Simpsons Network of podcasts alongside my co-host Bob Mackey. We have two weekly podcasts, Talking Simpsons, where we go through every episode of The Simpsons from the beginning. We're deep into season 10 now. And the other weekly podcast is What a Cartoon, where me and Bob talk about a different animated series once a week, giving its history and a ton of fun context to it, too. A recent one that's similar to in subject matter to this, we did Bubblegum Crisis with Jeremy as the guest. And we talked a bit about RoboCop in that, too, because I think that influenced that episode. So you can find Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon in all your podcast listening devices. We are supported on Patreon as well at patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, where you get so many exclusives that it would take me way too long to list them. But believe me, you get your money's worth there. You would buy that for $5. It's inflation. Guys. Yeah.
That's true. That'd be $5 today is $187. And I'm Bob Mackey. Henry nicely did all of our plugs, but yes, please check those things out. Also, I'm on Twitter as Bob Servo. And I want to push over that ED209 that's roaming downtown San Francisco. So help pay my bail when this goes out.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And remember, stay out of trouble.